Parvati Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Parvati Vasudevaya.
The reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 9th Canto, Chapter 19, entitled King Yayati Achieves Liberation, Text 21 to 24. Iti tvana surjayam tadiyam puravivaya dattva svajana santasmat adadevi gatasprihaha. Sukadeva Goswami said, after speaking in this way to his wife, Devayani, King Yayati, who is now free from all material desires, called his youngest son Puru and returned Puru's youth in exchange for his own old age. Dishe dakshina purvasyam druyam dakshina tu yadum pratichanturvasam chakra udichamananiswaram. King Yayati gave the southeast to his son Druyu, the south to his son Yadu, the west to his son Turvasi, and the north to his son Anu. In this way, he divided the kingdom. Bhumandalasya sarvasya purum arhatanam visham abhischagrajamstasya vasistapya vananyayo. Yayati enthroned his youngest son Puru as the emperor of the entire world and the proprietor of all riches, and he placed all the other sons who were older than Puru under Puru's control. Text 24. Avesitam varsa pugam. Sadvargam visa yesusa.
Sadvargam visa yesusa.
Sane namum chenidam.
Sane namum chenidam.
Yata paksha iva dijaha.
Yata paksha iva dijaha.
Asevitam.
Asevitam.
Being always engaged in.
Being always engaged in.
Parasa. Pugam, for many, many years.
For many, many years.
Sadvargam,
Sadvargam,
the six senses.
The six senses.
Including the mind.
Including the mind.
Visayesu.
Visayesu.
In sense enjoyment.
In sense enjoyment.
Saha.
Saha.
King Yayati.
King Yayati.
Ksanena.
Ksanena.
Within a moment.
Within a moment.
I'm really going to need some water before I choke. It's sort of slowly happening. Mumuche
gave up.
Nidam.
Nidam-ness.
Jatapaksaha. One that has grown his wings.
One that has grown his wings.
Eva,
Eva,
like. Dvijaha,
Dvijaha,
a bird. Translation. Having enjoyed sense gratification for many, many years, O King Pariksit, Yayati was accustomed to it, but he gave it up entirely in a moment, just as a bird flies away from the nest as soon as its wings have grown. Purport. That Maharaj Yayati was immediately liberated from the bondage of conditional life is certainly astonishing, but the example given herewith is appropriate. A tiny baby bird, dependent fully on its father and mother even to eat, suddenly flies away. Thanks a lot. Suddenly flies away from the nest when its wings have grown. Similarly, if one fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is immediately liberated from the bondage of conditional life as promised by the Lord Himself. Aham samsara prapebhyo moksha isyami. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, kirato inandra palinda pulka sabira sambhayavana kasalaya yini tapapya tapasriya sriya sujanti tasmai pravadishnave namah. Kirato huna andra palinda pulka sa Abhira, Sumba, Yavana, and the Kasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, for He is the Supreme Power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Lord Vishnu is so powerful that He can deliver at anyone at at once, if he's pleased to do so. And Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, can be pleased immediately if we accept his order by surrendering unto him, as Maharaj Yayati did. Maharaj Yayati was eager to serve Vasudev, Krishna, and therefore as soon as he wanted to renounce material life, Lord Vasudev helped him. We must ever be very sincere in surrendering ourselves into the lotus feet of the Lord. Then we can immediately be liberated from all the bonds of conditioned life. This is clearly expressed in the next verse. The story of Yayati is the story of a king who could not give up sense gratification, who was greatly attached to sexual activity, and somehow or other this whole episode takes place in another yuga, and in these other yugas things were possible that are now beyond imagination, but by some arrangement it was possible for him to exchange his youth, or exchange his old age with someone else for youth. So he tried with his different sons, and each one gave a good reason why not. And I mean, one of them said, "Well, this human form of life is meant for self-realization, so I need to use my youth and my body for developing along the spiritual path." So that may sound like a reasonable argument. Another one was saying, "I'm young, and you know, you're young, and you want something that I need to enjoy first before I can embrace old age." That's less impressive for an argument. But the youngest son, Puru, he gave his youth and voluntarily took the burden of old age, while his father was enjoying. So then in the end, we see that Yayati finally gets exhausted and he returns the youth to his youngest son. And then he divides his kingdom and all the sons, they get a share. And he puts the youngest son as the emperor. Just see, end good. All is well that ends well. As Shakespeare said. Puru came out as the one who did the best. So Dharma does pay off, and that is a fact. Dharma, whether it pays off in the material world, that is hard to say. In Kali Yuga, not necessarily, but it surely pays off on the eternal plane. Still, Bhagavad Gita is pointing out that good is never overcome by evil. So that's an interesting point. That faith we must have, that nothing can happen in this world and that will overcome righteousness. Although it sometimes appears to be like that, because there are so many oppressors that seem to oppress innocent people. So it seems that righteousness is being oppressed at times. And that may externally be so. After all, Hiranyakasipu managed to conquer the entire universe. And he took the position of Indra. He sat down on Indra's throne. And the universe is arranged in such a way that the demigods can enjoy so many pleasures. At the time of Hiranyakasipu, the universe behaved better than ever. Better than ever. Everything was perfect. The whole universe was just, and everyone in it was very carefully moving about in fear, in submission to Hiranyakasipu. So it appears that the demoniac forces took control of the whole universe, that evil indeed was subjugating the devotees. It said even Narada, Even Narada was sort of praising Hiranyakasipu. Of course, Narada is like that. That he sometimes wants to speed up the course of things so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear a little sooner. Therefore, he sometimes helps the demons to become a little more demoniac. Yes. Anyway, we see then here that at one point when Yayati finally came to Krishna consciousness, then he could immediately leave all the old things he was so attached to. So that's important because all of us are experiencing that it is difficult to give up material attachment. But we should know that once Krishna consciousness awakens, then suddenly it all, everything seems so insignificant other than Krishna, and so easily one can leave everything. Also at the time of death, we are confronted that it's all over. For a materialist, that is a total disaster because there's no alternative. There's nothing to turn to. So the only thing they have is them crumbling. But for a devotee, there all along has been Krishna and the material energy, and one has relied on both. But then when the material energy suddenly slips from our hands, then at one point, then one can very easily get in that motion. Alright, let it go. Let go. And then one can very quickly focus on Krishna. So in this way, it is very powerful to engage in devotional service, even if with material desires. It's not that I'm not making any advancement. For years I am feeling that I'm not making any advancement. I'm just struggling exactly with the same things I was struggling with so many years ago. Haven't improved a bit. Not entirely. The devotional service continued. The benefit of that service is there now. Maybe not immediately in a change of heart, but at least in the form of blessings. Each service that we do is remaining with us as blessings, as goodwill that is upon us. And if the Lord so desires, then our heart, the state of our heart can change very easily. It is Krishna who helps. The story of the sparrow and the eggs is a very appropriate story. We know that sparrow lost the eggs in the put them on the beach. The ocean suddenly came out unexpected very far and grabbed those eggs. The sparrow was very upset. The ocean has stolen my eggs, and the sparrow decided to drink the water of the ocean and made a solemn declaration, an ultimatum. And I tell you, ocean, return my eggs or I'll drink your water. The ocean was not impressed. And the ocean didn't even bother to reply. Simply carried on. Wave after wave. But Garuda was moved by that small sparrow's determination, and then Garuda came and Garuda said to the ocean, and now return those eggs or I will drink your water. Yes, Mr. Garuda, of course, Mr. Garuda, here are the eggs, anything else, Mr. Garuda? Definitely, Mr. Garuda, yes, sir. In this way, suddenly the ocean became very cooperative. So, it is like that we are trying to become Krishna conscious. We are trying to give up our attachment
to material sense gratification. We are trying, and it doesn't work. They are trying like anything, and still, after everything, you know, you can have bhakti shastri, still material desires. You can have, you know, bhakti vaibhav, and still no bhava. What to do, you know? You may be able to explain all the sanchari bhavs and all the anubhavs and all the various different symptoms of ecstasy, including the 8 transformations and all these things in great detail. But do you have them? So, like that, it's not so easy. Not so easy. That is a fact. But just like the sparrow, who said, we'll drink the ocean. We're trying to overcome the ocean of our sinful desires. Knowing that maybe we'll never succeed in overcoming them. But daivyesha guna mahima mamayatavartiya manevye papadya te mayamitam tarantite. It is Krishna who will deliver us from all these things. We hope by our efforts to attract the mercy of Krishna. And that is the case. The more service we do, even if we don't change, the more mercy we attract. See? Therefore, we carry on. Because then Krishna will do it. Moksha is yami masuchara. He'll do it. Sarvadharmam parichayamamikam saranam praja. Just surrender unto me. Abandon all variety of activity. I will deliver you from the reactions of all your sinful activities. Do not fear. Have no anxiety. In other words, don't worry. Don't worry, I will do it, Krishna says. That verse is divided in 2 halves. The first half is what we do. The second half is what Krishna does. You see. So that's important to understand. So it's Krishna's part, ultimately. His mercy, he will do. He will make the arrangements. So even, what to do and still have material desire, anyway. Just don't bother with it. It's not worth it. Don't put your faith there. Why would you put your faith in material desires? Oh, it looks so good. It does look good. But there's a crocodile in the water. It looks beautiful. Oh, it's so hot. My beautiful lake. Let's go and swim. Yeah, but there's a crocodile in the water. Aren't you hot, my friend? Don't you want to swim? No, it's okay. I don't really feel like swimming today. Because there's a crocodile in the water. That's the situation. There's always a crocodile in the water in the material world. So, therefore, we say no thank you. No thank you. All that sense gratification that looks so nice. We know that it's not entirely as sweet as it appears. And that, keeping that in mind, we don't put our faith there. And when our faith is not there, then it's not so hard to give up material desires, even although they are there. We put all our faith in Krishna. Shada sapta visvas kahe sudrida nischai Krishna bhakti kaira sarva kama kritahai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Shraddha means the firm conviction that from practicing Krishna consciousness all good will come. So that's what's required. That's really what we need. And then we can put the material desires somewhere on the shelf. And Krishna will remove them over time. So that's how it really works. Yaki Ata Vinanda Palinda Pulkasa Abhira Sambha Yavana in the Kasa basis. So here is a list of many
people from all over the world. The Kiratas are the Africans. The Hunas are the Europeans. The Andras are from part of India. The Pulindas are the ones, the Mediterranean people. The Pulkasa, what were they again? The Pulkasa, I forgot what they were. Anyway, slipped my mind. The Abira is pretty obvious. That sort of still sounds like Lawrence of Arabia. So, like that. Yavanas, the Turks, and so on. And the Afghanis and that part of the Middle East. And the Khazars, the Chinese. So, you know, then you've sort of pretty much covered a good percentage of the world population, actually. We just went all over the globe, basically. And that is, this list is described, Yen Yen Chapapa Yatapasra Yasraya. Those, this is the population that have taken shelter of sinful habits. So here we are, sinful habits in our culture. It's true that in my language, most proverbs are not vegetarian. And if you think about that, you know, that's sort of, that means something, isn't it? So, yes, what to do? That's the culture. That's the culture. So, therefore Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is a cultural conquest. I remember here in Cape Town quite a number of years back, there was a newsletter and there was a student who had written an article in the newsletter about staying a weekend in the temple here at Rondebosch, right? And the experience. And the student said that it was not the chanting. It was not the chanting. It was not the philosophy that scared me, that totally shocked me. It was the culture. It just was the culture, a totally different culture. It's like, that was the shock. That was really the thing I got confronted with very strongly. Yes. But that culture is needed. Do we have to wear bed sheets and kitchen curtains? Come on. I mean, really, you know. Give us a break. Let the furniture be the furniture. I mean, you know, do we really have to do this? Can't we just be normal? Yeah. Like, you know. And all these things. For some reason, ladies have to keep their head very hot. And men have to keep their head very cool. So that's part of the culture, you know. But, what shall we say? So many things are there. Why can't we just be, you know, like everybody else? Well, externally we could be. And then internally, be a devotee, possible. But of course, the clothes that people wear, they're also the product of the culture. Like a few centuries ago, the aristocracy used to wear big wigs, right? They even got the nickname, right? The bosses were known as the bigwigs, right? You know, I mean, well, there goes a bigwig, you know. I mean, it's big. That sounds like it's okay in winter, but imagine, you know, especially in the colonies, that must have been really rough, right? Sweating, you know. I had experience, because there was a time when Hare Krishnas used to shave their head and then go out on Sankirtan wearing wigs. And they, and since I have blue eyes, they decided to give me a blonde curly one. God, in Australia, of all countries, where men are rough as guts. Oh, well. All part of surrender. Yes, and those things were hot, that you'd have this wig on a hot summer day, and water was streaming down your face because those things don't breathe. It's suffocating. God, was it hot? You know? And then because it looked so terrible, I put a head on top of the thing. A baseball cap. Then it was double hot. Anyway. Tapo divyam putrakiyena sattvam sujityasmi brahma sukyam tanantam. It is said that we must perform austerity for a divine purpose. Tapo divyam. Then we can get Brahma Sukha, then we can achieve transcendental happiness. Only then. So, whatever it takes. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that clothes are a product of a culture. And a few centuries ago, people tried to impress and therefore were wearing big wigs. And then, at another time, people tried to impress, and therefore they were wearing tight jeans, right? All with the purpose to impress. So each culture has a purpose and a goal. A culture represents a goal, and the goal of a culture makes up everything, makes up the dress, makes up the lifestyle, makes up the house, and so on. It's just like a traditional Indian house of someone who is, a little bit wealthy. It is a house built around a courtyard. And the courtyard serves two purposes. One purpose is for ventilation, cross-ventilation, obviously, in a hot place. But it also has another purpose. The courtyard, the inner part of the house, is for the family. That's where the ladies and the children are. And then the rooms that are just next to the entrance of the house, they are like public rooms. They are rooms for receiving guests. Some stranger comes and give him a seat there, receive him, you meet him there. And he never actually comes into the house. Not into the back of the house where the family lives. In this way, he can come for some business to the house and meet the men there, whereas the ladies and children have their privacy. So that's culture. That's a culture. That's a culture. That's a house designed after a culture where freely mixing of men and women is not recommended. So therefore, culture reflects an outlook on life, reflects the goal in life. And our Western modern culture, or the African culture, the European culture, or the culture of the Andras, or the culture of the Greeks, the Spanish and the Italians, or the culture of the Arabs, the culture of the Chinese, doesn't reflect the eternal goal of life to become a devotee of Krishna. It reflects other goals, temporary goals. So any culture that reflects temporary goals is a problem. Therefore, like in Africa, there's such a thing called roots, it's a big thing, like you have Heritage Day, and then you get lots of cultural manifestations, different dances. I've witnessed the different tribes do their particular dance, and local people know the styles and so on. And I saw that there was one where there were the very fat ladies in the grass skirts with their backside to the audience. It was culture, there was no doubt about it. Roots. But what kind of roots? Where is that rooted? Is that grass skirt dance rooted in what? Sense gratification. Isn't it? Obvious. Obvious, not in self-realization. Right? That was really clear as the ladies were expertly rolling their hips and the grass was moving in rhythmic movements. And it was clear that the goal of that dance was sense gratification. Okay, there are other dances. Bharat Natyam is not my favorite, I must say. Especially the music is like, oh God. I mean, but if you look at it, it's at least, right, at least there's something about devotion. Of course, most of it is devotion to the demigods, and there are plenty of devotees who are doing that. And then we get fusion dances on Durban Ratiyatra. And we see some African guy, you know, is also doing Bharat Natyam with the ladies and so on, because of course he can also do it. But it's clear that he's more interested in the ladies than in the deity. Let's be honest. Not on anybody's case, but let's be honest. Yeah. Culture. So much culture. So, Krishna consciousness also offers us culture. Yeah. Without culture, and so it's a change. We're not used to this, we're not used to that. But we embrace that different culture for the spiritual sake. Because it helps. Yeah. It helps. Where desire falls short, culture fills in. We just do these things because it's the culture, not because we desire it, because it's culture. So we learn the whole culture. You have to bow down. Why do you have to bow down? Don't bow down. Okay. Bad nose on the ground. Can't I just move two fingers? No, all the way down. But it has an effect. It has an effect. It does, not immediately, but it does create some humility, actually, just bowing down. So that's part of the culture, all that. So it's a culture, Krishna consciousness, and we require that culture. That culture has two sides. One, we cultivate our bhakti. Krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama. So there is a whole way that we behave. So Srila Rupa Goswami explains it all. And that's how we get a grip on things. Otherwise, how are we ever going to change? By determination, good luck. I'm going to do it. I shall do it. I want to do it. Maharaj, I promise you with my hand on the Bhagavad Gita and on my heart at the same time that I'll never do it again. Never. Never. 3 days later. It got out of hand. It does get out of hand. So, culture is what sustains us, where desire falls short. And therefore we must learn and practice the culture of Krishna consciousness. Therefore we dress like this. Although some have pointed out that the kurta is actually a Muslim dress.
That's true. It is. It's not Vedic. You know, if you go really Vedic, then you don't wear sewn cloth, right? And you take this cloth, you tie it in different knots and, you know, wrapped around yourself, and that's cool. It's cool in various ways. It may be all right in the summer in Africa, but like I saw them in Mayapur recently, where, you know, and I was teasing them, right? The guys with the bare shoulder, you know, it's like they have one shoulder, that's like uncovered, you know, because, and I asked them, so why you have to have that shoulder always out? Just so that you're always ready for puja. Yeah, so, well, you know, okay, I'm also ready for puja, you know. I mean, it's not so hard to kind of pull out the arm, you know. the argument didn't convince me, to be honest, because, you know, there is a proverb about giving someone the cold shoulder. And that one never attracted me, you know, the cold shoulder thing. So, what to do? Some adjustments may be there. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was practical, and he put people in the kurtas. He did it. Yeah? From that day on, our sampradaya wears kurtas. From the day of Bhakti Siddhanta. And also, he put brahmacharis in saffron. Otherwise, saffron, rakta kapra, that's sannyasi cloth. That's our color. Hey, guys. Wait a minute. Brahmacharis are in white. Says Hari Bhakti Vilas. Yeah. But okay, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta put that in saffron, so for the sake of preaching, and the kurtas also, so that they would look a little, you know, respectable. Actually, the Ramakrishna Mission started it. They were organized and they wore kurtas. And then, you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta put the gaudiyas also in kurtas, so that they could just meet rich people and impress them with fancy kurtas and big buttons. Wow, a kurta! Apparently, that wasn't a present, an impressive thing in those days, in that culture. You know, something like nowadays, a cool shirt, you know, with a design like Lord Kanye was wearing all the time. Something like that. Yeah, in those days it was the kurta. That was impressive. So, all right, that can be part of it. So how Vedic are dresses and what Vedic really is, who knows anyway what Vedic is? Vedic. Are we even Vedic? Are we even trying to be Vedic? Has anybody even read the Vedas? Actually. Is there anybody in the room who read the Vedas? I mean, aren't you supposed to represent Vedic culture? I mean, even the pundits, I mean, you didn't read the Vedas from cover to cover 3 times. Doesn't it say 3 times you have to read the Vedas? Have you read that at least? Have you read that Brahmanas used to read the Vedas 3 times? 10? You know? What are we then? We're simply representing the culture of bhakti, the culture of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's like, it is, some have said we are the Chaitanya Saraswat Sampradaya. We are the Sampradaya that comes from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So, we can say, we are the Chaitanya Bhaktivedanta Sampradaya. That's us, you know, the Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Sampradaya. Because he's made adjustments, and yes, that's fine. Did you ever eat on Ekadasi? I mean, did you? Did you eat French fries? What sauce did you have with them? Tell us, honestly. What did you have?
Chili sauce.
What else? Omegasi, chili sauce. God, chili's omegasi. Oh, gosh. Oh, chili's omegasi. Oh, that's terrible. That's not Anadolpa. Oh, that's not authorized, chili's. No, worse than that, you know. It says in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that anybody who eats on a Ekadasi in his next life, a hog. I'm sorry about that. A hog. Did you eat on a Ekadasi or not? Well, you did. French fries with chili sauce. There you go. Too bad Hari Bhakti Vilas has just told us, you know, you'll be a hog in the next life. Yeah. So what to do? So there's the mercy of Prabhupada, that sort of thing. It's okay. French fries are fine. You can have. Here's some chili sauce. Don't worry about it. It's alright. You can have tomato chutney. No problem. Oh my God, see. You know, oh my God, see. Sometimes the Gaudiya Mat looks at us like, you know, but, you know, how can you eat this on a galaxy? But, you know.
I'm going to call my son Narayan.
So we do these things. We do these things on the strength of the Acharya. The Acharya is simplified. And he has the power to do so. He's given the blessings. He's given the form. So we just take shelter of what the Acharya gave, of his blessings. It's a culture of blessings that protects us. He has blessed them. Oh yes, we take shelter. And that's really how this movement is this movement. And then of course we have Krishna West, you know, and that's also okay. Yeah, that's also okay for people who are so much involved in the world that they need that kind of platform to function on. And then you can say, all right, you can also from that platform cultivate Krishna consciousness, even if the culture is not ideal. Even if the culture is not the culture of the spiritual world, doesn't matter, because chanting Hare Krishna is the activity of the spiritual world. So that's good enough. But we all feel, at least I feel, if I wear jeans and t-shirt, I feel different. You know? I'm Kadamba Kala Swami in jeans and t-shirt. So, just in case I wake up sleeping dogs, I'll wear a dhoti. Just that's the only reason. I'm not down on anybody, but just, you know, I'm not against devotees who wear jeans and this stuff. But I'm not doing it because I kind of am worried about the sleeping dogs. Let them sleep, you know. Let them sleep. That's the idea. So we take shelter of a culture of Krishna consciousness, put the dogs to sleep, let them sleep, sleep. And then, you know, at the end, after a lifetime of service, hope that Krishna is satisfied with our attempt, and then will give us the rest. And then all these dynamics kicking, last moment between Krishna and material energy. Oh well, what to do? It's over. Okay, let it go. It is like that. Yeah. At the end, one can easily give up many attachments. So any questions, any comments?
Maharaj, you're mentioning how we can have material desires, but we shouldn't place faith in them.
Yes.
But placing, whether or not we place faith in them, is that a question of knowledge?
In a way, well, placing faith in them means that we start believing that they'll bring us happiness. And then the next thing is, Jayato visya pumsan sambhutisu pajayate, then begins the contemplation, then begins the development of attachment, then begins, you know, and then we glide down. Therefore, not putting faith in them means, I don't really believe in these things ever, it's not worth it to meditate on it, on the grass skirts and all that, you know. No. Some people, they've always wanted to have a grass skirt, but no. Things like this, our attachments, we just give them up. We give them up. We don't put our faith, so we don't dwell on it, we don't act upon it, because we don't believe that it's worthwhile. You know, like, I like so many material things. I definitely like a Mercedes much better than, you know, some cheapo Toyota. Yeah, I do. It's nice. I like those chairs that you can adjust, you know, like little up the middle back, like the extra leg room. And I like all that. Or big American cars. I like those things. But at the same time, you know, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth all the trouble. It's not worth the entanglement. It's not that good. It's not going to make me happy. So, forget it. Just rough it.
Is it true to say that our culture is very personal? And therefore, compared with the Western culture, it's very impersonal. It's a very attractive feature for us to attract people to the movement.
Our culture is very personal, and compared to the Western culture, which is very impersonal, our culture has an attractive feature. Yeah, I sometimes use the example of the West has a female form for justice, right? A lady. And she's blindfolded, and she holds scales. And that means the law is blind, you know, the law is equal to all. And then you look at the Manu Samhita, the law book of Vedic culture, and it's completely personal. It said the law is different for different types of people. Yes, according to their purity. If a person, like, if a Brahmana, who is basically pure, makes steps over the line, then for him there is a small purification. But if a Sudra steps over the line, then there is more punishment. You see an example of Sukracharya. Sukracharya, after that whole incident with Bali Maharaj, he gave a wrong instruction to Bali Maharaj and so on. That was the whole thing. And then after the whole thing is over, after Vanadev has appeared and taken all the land back and all this and so on, and Bali is finally released and so on, then there's a discussion between Sukracharya and Vanadev. And Vanadev is basically in this discussion saying, Sukracharya, on what basis were you actually arguing, you know, this particular view that you were presenting to Bali Maharaj? It was like Sukracharya was like a little, like, well, you know. And then, he admitted, yes, no, actually, it was a wrong interpretation, yes. Okay, and that settled the matter, basically. After that, Sukracharya was okay, and he was reinstated in a great position of responsibility. It was all it took, because otherwise he was quite pure. So yes, it's very personal. Very personal culture. But you know, it will attract some people, and some people are afraid of it. They're afraid of it, you know. I mean, you know, they don't want to get too personal at all. I mean, they love it to speak into an answer phone. And they will never ever take a call directly. No way for screened calls, you know. Yes. You, okay, first of all, who wants to talk to me? Second of all, why do they want to talk to me? So please speak into my answer phone and tell me, why are you calling me? And on the other side of it, take your call. Because the spirit of sacrifice is gone. The spirit of sense gratification is predominant, and as a result, people, they don't want to make sacrifice. It's about me and my senses, and I'm not sure. You're not always, you know, bringing me enjoyment. Sometimes you do, therefore I screen your calls. Okay, you're bringing me trouble, sorry, I'm not home. So like this, some people will be attracted and some will not. So this is when we preach the personal aspect of our philosophy. And in that way it works. We'll attract the devotees. The devotees will always be attracted to this movement. And the non-devotees will always like, yeah. I mean, I don't know, strange. Any other questions? Yes.
In your class, you were mentioning about Bhakti Siddhanta Sarai Thakur, you know, introducing, you know, like kurta for preaching sake, you know.
Yeah.
Also introducing saffron for brahmacharis so that they can go out and preach. So, like he was a very practical person.
Yeah.
So, as a grihastha, you know, sometimes when you go out, there are many situations where, you know, I just want to, you know, it's very difficult to draw a line between to be practical and whether, you know,
no, be practical. I mean, we don't have to draw a line. It's like, as a grihastha in the world, naturally you have to wear civil clothes and at work and so on. You know? And you cannot take the external cultural features of the movement, and then you have to, in each situation, draw a line yourself. What you're going to eat. Big question. What you eat during a business lunch in a non-vegetarian restaurant? Okay, you order a salad. Give us a salad. Eat very slowly. Just sort of. One trick is move your hand, but don't eat. There's a sannyasi, you learn those tricks. Because, you know, feed the Swami is an approach to life. Anyway, so and then somehow or other it all will fall into place. It all will fall into place. Then Krishna will make arrangements. But somehow or other, we have principles. And the principles we keep, regardless of where we are, and whether we're in disguise, or, you know, whether we're in Vaishnava attire, or whether we're in worldly attire, whether we're in an ocean of mundane people, but our principles, they stay. They just don't change. That's nice. That's nice. But it can be hard. It can be hard sometimes. It's really hard to find something to eat, or this or that, you know. It's like, when I was still in the Grihastha ashram, once I decided, you know, to take my wife to for a visit to Rome in Italy. And we want to go to the temple, and we come there, and the temple was gone. It was closed. The temple was gone. So, gee, what do we do now? Anyway, we had another address of a restaurant, so we went to the restaurant, and the restaurant was also gone and also closed. And there were no devotees. And I said, gee, what do we do now? You know, okay, move in a hotel, lots of money already spent. nothing vegetarian. There was one, and the wife was hungry. And when they are hungry, you gotta go and then bring something to eat. That's how it is. So I was hunting for something vegetarian. It was impossible. Finally, I saw one restaurant. They had some fruit in the window. So I went in there. I said, "Oh, I want to buy that fruit." She said, "No, that's for decoration." You know, "I'll buy it anyway." I said, "Sell it to me, please. You know, buy it. I pay a good price." Okay, negotiated an expensive price. Finally, got the fruit. Only fruit? You know. I mean, at least there was some fruit. But then after 2 days, we found a devotee who had a hotel. We met him in the street and he had a hotel in the same neighborhood. He took us to that hotel and he took us in there, and my former wife says, "Is there some prasadam?" And there was. Lots of Italian, you know. I mean, wow. That was good. That prasadam was very nice. So somehow or other, right, with difficulty, we are doing it. Also, I went to Bangkok. I went to Bangkok again in the Grihastha Ashram with my former wife. I come on the airport, one man comes up to me, says, "You want go-go girl? You want go-go girl?" I said, "Come on, I'm with my wife." He said, "Go-go boy?" It was too much, you know. Too much. Anyway, so then stayed there in some miserable hotel, you know. But then we heard there was a devotee somewhere. We had an address. So we went there, Indian devotee. We come in his shop. So, you know, we're dressed like regular kami clothes. And we say to him, "Hare Krishna." He says, "Oh, wait a minute." And then he went behind the counter of the shop. He stood there and he pushed a button and suddenly, and then he pulled a string. And then above the counter, curtains opened and then it started to play. Go in the shop. And he had deities there. It was nice. Devotees are nice, somehow or other. Yes. We find them. We find them. Even, you know. Then it goes on. Yeah. But we don't sacrifice our principles, not even in Bangkok, which is a tough place. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.